Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, November 13th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Friday the 13th.
I know. It's scary, isn't it?
Actually, it's been a pretty good day today, so I was born on the 13th, so
really?
That number's not
Was it
bad.
A Friday the 13th?
I'll never tell.
Uh-huh.
I'll never tell. But gold today, could have been worse, down 320 at 1,082.80, pretty much where we ended the week last week. It was only a couple dollars lower from a week ago, so a quiet week for gold. Silver is down 6 cents today at 1,435. Little more action there, about a 50-cent drop for the week for silver. Platinum down big today, almost 2%, down 17 at 864. Palladium got hammered today, down 4%, down $22 at 542. And again, as I mentioned this yesterday, it really does look like platinum and palladium are pulling away from gold and silver, as the platinum and palladium are usually good economy metals, and they really do follow a little bit more in the commodity sector. And I think we're seeing perhaps a breakout from that with gold and silver. That doesn't mean they're going to break out in price and you know, go to $8,000 tomorrow. But what it does mean is they're disconnecting from the commodity sector that has just really been damaged, has really been down. Bloomberg's commodity index, I mentioned yesterday, I think it's the lowest level it's been since 1999. So this is why we're seeing all that pressure, I believe, on palladium and platinum.
And what you're saying is that platinum and palladium are basically commodities metals, and they're going down. And they're going down more rapidly than gold. And where the implication is that gold is resisting, that gold and silver, but gold in particular, is resistant to the decline in commodities.
No, I didn't say it was resistant. I think that could have been some of the pressure that has been applied to gold and silver. But I think now you're beginning to see a little bit of disconnect. Lots of times when you have a market segment, the whole segment will go down. It doesn't matter if, you know, it's just if you're attached to it, everything is being sold in that commodity sector. And I think perhaps maybe that's why we saw some pressure on gold and silver, particularly silver, because silver is a big industrial metal now also.
Yeah.
But I think we're beginning to see perhaps a little breakaway from the commodity sector in gold and silver.
which is evidence that the public regards gold as a monetary metal more so than a commodity metal.
That is correct.
And they wanted the idea, we look at the prices here, we've got gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and even rhodium on this list. They're trying to put all five of these into one category, which is commodities. But the implication is that gold is not behaving as a pure commodity. It is doing what we've argued it is all along. It's a money, it's a monetary metal, and therefore it's not being as adversely affected as the others.
And you might see platinum, palladium turn around and follow the gold and silver too. But I'm not sure where the bottom would be in platinum and palladium along with the other commodities. So, they could very well have a reversal. I'm not as big of a fan on palladium because that market has been so manipulated. But platinum, hey, you're looking at a $200 difference between platinum and gold, and usually platinum's a little bit higher than gold. So, they could turn around and follow the precious metals, the gold and silver, in the future. But right now, it certainly doesn't seem that is what they're doing. The USDX today is up 0.39 at 98.94. Crude oil got another beating today, down one full point, 40.75. Some of the things that I were following up on crude oil is, if it breaks the 40 level, it could have some pretty significant drops after that. And so we'll just have to follow that and see where that takes us. And you have to also remember what happens when those crude oil prices drop so significantly. Don't forget, you have a lot of these oil companies that have huge loans. They'll be defaulting on their loans, and it could really begin, I call it the black swan. Black oil, black swan, get it out?
No, you're going to have to.
I figured you would.
You're going to have to send an email on that one, Melody.
Hey, the Dow today is down 202 points to 17,245. The NASDAQ is down 77, 49.27. S&P down 22 at 2023. And something else interesting about the S&P, I think this week retail had the worst week since 2009. And in the S&P, you have what did I hear? 65% of the S&P is based on a lot of the companies in there would benefit from lower oil prices. But with the retail being down at the same time, because everybody thought with the lower oil prices, it would lower gasoline prices and people would have more money in their pockets to spend. Well, it doesn't really show that this week when you have the worst retail numbers since 2009. So, not so.
That bode for
Christmas, not so good.
Yeah, I understand.
But we really haven't had a good Christmas in, 3 years?
Well, I've been
or for a very long time. But I mean, based on their numbers.
Time.
What?
I said I've been disappointed ever since I didn't get that pony, Melody. Mm. Been a long time. I've been sad-eyed and broken-hearted.
But based on their numbers, there hasn't been a good Christmas for a long time. I don't think we've had a good Christmas since 2008. But if you have to go by their numbers. And another interesting thing today, the fear and greed index. It was in there in the pretty high greed area, and that dropped like a rock. So we're beginning to head back into the fear market, which we experienced in August and September when we had the market drop almost 2,000 points. So,
do you think that fear and greed index is particularly reliable? And the reason I ask, it seems to be all over the board. It's volatile, and you can be in greed today and fear tomorrow. And what does that, when it gets that volatile, is it really giving us information that we can rely on, or the volatility itself is something to be concerned about?
I think what it gives you is a trend, and I don't give much merit to it on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. but it does give you a trend.
Yeah. So over a period of and a, I find if you it compare interesting. Week to week, month to month, you can see some evidence of a trend, but on a daily basis, it's like watching a ping pong ball.
Yeah, I mean, you can go from, you know, extreme fear to greed in 24 hours. So yeah, you know, but it can give you a trend.
All right.
What's next, Al?
I don't know. We're talking about the markets in general. Here's an article from Michael Snyder. Four harbingers of stock market doom that foreshadowed the 2008 crash are flashing red again. And what he's arguing in this article, and Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse, and he's a very prolific writer. If you're following, you know, the economic system and whatever, you've almost certainly run across some of his work. Very prolific writer, intelligent analyst. He says so many of the exact same patterns that we witnessed just before the stock market crash of 2008 are playing out again right before our eyes. For example, he says, most of the time a stock market crash doesn't come out of nowhere. Normally there are specific leading indicators that we can look for to tell us whether major trouble is on the horizon. First one he looks at is the junk bond market. A crash in junk bonds almost always precedes a market crash. And he's observing the junk bonds are currently crashing. In 2015, we've seen the most corporate bond downgrades since the financial crisis. And corporate defaults are absolutely skyrocketing. Some corporations aren't paying their debts. He says so far this year, nearly 300 U.S. corporations have seen their bonds downgraded. That's an interesting figure. I don't see it as necessarily significant. He didn't identify the 300 U.S. corporations. If we're talking about 300 out of the Fortune 500, I'd say that's powerful information. 300 which corporations? You know, that doesn't. But he says the 12-month default rate on high-yield corporate debt has doubled this year. This suggests that we are well into the next major debt default cycle. So he's saying junk bonds are going down, and he's saying they went down prior to the 2008-2009 collapse. They're doing it again. He thinks that's a signal that we're in a similar position. His number two harbinger is the price of crude oil. A massive crash in the price of oil preceded the stock market crash of 2008.
I disagree with that, but go ahead.
Well, I understand. I wonder about it myself. I don't recall that, tell you the truth. To verify, but I don't recall that. But he does say it, and Snyder is usually, you know, somebody you can rely on.
Well, I do recall.
Okay.
You had oil. They ran oil up to 150. Yeah, it crashed from 150. But I believe what really started this whole thing off in 2008 was when it ran to 150. I mean, you had truckers that couldn't deliver. I mean, people, when you had $4, $5, and $6 gasoline prices, it tanked everyone. And it did drop significantly after that 150, but you know, they ran it up to 150, and it just didn't.
So was the glass
just not
half
the same.
Empty?
It's just
it
not the
full?
Same. It's just not the same downturn like I think we're experiencing now, where demand is, I think, can be a major, you know, player in today's world. So no, I think it's different. It happened, but it's different.
All right. Well, in any case, that's his number two. He says the price of oil, he's arguing it did crash prior to the last economic crash, and he says a stock market crash in 2008, price oil fell dramatically from its high. And his third is there's an ongoing crash of other industrial commodities. And he said this also preceded the stock market crash of 2008 and is a clear sign that global economic activity is really slowing down. There's no question global activity, not is really slowing down. It has dramatically slowed down. I think when they write the history books and whatever, I think they'll agree that we've been in a global economic depression, not necessarily national, but globally. I'd say the global economy's been in a depression maybe for a couple of years. And when they come back and write about it, they say, well, it actually started when? 2012, 13? When? When did the global depression? They're not admitting we have one right now, but they can't. Even if it's true, they can't. They guess, oh, my gosh, we're having a depression. You aren't going to hear that from Obama. You're not going to hear it from Janet Yellen. Not until we are in it so deep that we can't easily get out. It will be so obvious to everybody that the government will find, well, all right, we're having a depression. You know. So, again, in any case, ongoing crash of industrial commodities. He particularly talks about prices of aluminum, tin, iron ore, and coal, and focuses on copper. Price of copper is almost always starts declining before stocks do. It's referred to as Dr. Copper. It's a good indicator of what's happening in the economy. When copper is up, the economy is running hot. When copper is down, the economy is running slow. It's tending to recession and or depression. He says the fall in the price of copper signals is one signal that is absolutely screaming that a major financial crisis is imminent. His fourth item is the surging U.S. dollar. Now, he says the U.S. dollar surged just before the financial crisis of 2008, and it's happening again now. Most Americans don't understand this, but the truth is that a rising U.S. dollar puts an incredible amount of stress on emerging markets around the globe. Now, I understand that's what's happened, the rising, but it's more correct, as we've been trying to explain on the program for a year or more, I don't know how long we've been doing this, talking about when we go into deflation, it is not simply an adverse fact for emerging markets. It's an adverse factor for debtors, all right? The emerging markets would do fine if they weren't big-time debtors. It's the debt, not the emerging market. It's the debt, the debtors that are being hurt. He says again, most Americans don't understand this, but the truth is that a rising U.S. dollar puts an incredible amount of stress on emerging markets around the globe. Since the financial crisis, many of these emerging markets have been on a massive debt binge. And much of that debt was denominated in U.S. dollars. Now that the dollar has increased in value, emerging market borrowers are finding it takes much more of their own local currencies to service and pay those debts. Defaults rapidly rising, and emergency market economies all over the world, such as Brazil, have plunged into recession. It's the debt can't withstand deflation. And that means it's not just emerging markets that are vulnerable on this. It's all debtors. If you're deeply indebted, you went into debt a couple of years ago, and now the deflation is going to make it more difficult for you to repay your debt. And our government, as I've harped for, I don't know, considerable period of time, biggest debtor in the world. It's going to get busted by deflation.
You know what? We talked the other day about we were trying to think of a reason why our government would want a stronger dollar when we do know that, you know, inflation is around the corner and coming our way. However, you mentioned Brazil in this article by Michael Snyder, and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know what? Brazil, BRICS, you know, maybe this was part of the way for the U.S. to get back at some of these emerging markets that were attached to China, creating their own central banks and doing all their trading. And by strengthening our dollar, it has hurt them. Not along with the falling oil prices, even those emerging markets that have a lot of their economies tied to the profits of oil, you know, it kind of makes a little bit of sense there.
Yeah, it kind of does, but it's still a question of cutting off your own nose to spite your face. I mean, if we're going to do deflation,
hey, we're talking about trade wars. We're talking about currency wars.
I understand
that. About countries are fighting, as I said earlier today on the program, for scraps.
Yep.
They're fighting for scraps.
We are not fighting for scraps insofar as we allow. Our government allows or encourages deflation. They are, the deflation hurts U.S. exporters. We're not exporting as much because deflation makes our prices higher.
We're fighting for scraps to the point of having future trade agreements for various places. I had an article that I touched on this morning about how China is going around and making all these individual trade agreements with, I have the information here. We're about ready to go to break. Just to offset the TPP, the trade agreement with the 12 countries, with South Korea. They're going out to all these little countries. That's kind of like what Donald Trump wants to do. He doesn't want to have trade agreements that encompasses, 12 nations. He wants to make individual agreements. And that's what China's doing. They're saying, hey, if you're making these agreements, we're not part of it. You want to take the other part and step into these other Asian countries. Well, we're going to do our own thing. So there's a big trade fight, war, whatever you want to call it, going on.
Yeah.
And to say that the U.S. wouldn't hurt themselves to strike back.
Well, it's one of those things. If you're in jeopardy,
American people know what bombs are about, but they have no idea what goes on, with the financial markets and the interrelationships with the dollar and everything else. So.
Well, I think everybody, including the federal government and the Federal Reserve, is a little bit in the dark. We're in places nobody really understands right now. They're hoping they know what they're doing, but it's not clear that they do. We're going to take a break for some commercials, be back on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I want to remind the listeners to visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and you can listen to these programs live, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And I think we had a little bit of a problem. I had calls this week. We thought we had it fixed, and then it happened again. The archives are acting up, so we're also in the process of trying to get that fixed. But, and I also want to mention to the listeners who listen to the program at a different time than the actual live program. If you want to send us a question or even call during the day for a question, call the 800 number. And just leave the question, you know, just ask for Melody and give me the question. We'll answer it on the radio. Or you can email me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. I have two emails, Al.
Okay.
But Discount Gold and Silver, everybody uses.
Discount As opposed gold. To dgscoins.com? Or,
well, that the question's at dgscoins.com. Coins.com. Yeah, everybody uses discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com or DG or questions at dgscoins.com.
Okay.
Either or will work. But yeah, so that is for the listeners who hear the program at a later time.
Okay.
What's next?
Oh, I don't know. We've got Athens erupts in violence. That's yesterday on Thursday. This is from Christian Science Monitor, and the headline is Athens erupts in violent protests over austerity measures. At least one Athens protest turned violent in Greece after thousands walked away from their jobs in protest against austerity measures. Workers left their jobs in droves and fled into the streets of Greece on Thursday in a massive countrywide strike aimed at sending a message against further austerity measures. Greece has taken on nearly $100 billion in debt since the country's economy began to stumble in 2010. Now, this is the heart of the problem. Greece borrowed 100 billion euros. All right? They say they've taken on 100 billion in debt. Yeah, because they borrowed 100 billion euros, right? And they can't pay it back. They don't have the resources to pay it back. There's the problem. They borrowed more than they can pay. This is like they are a subprime borrower, all right? They are analogous to the subprime borrowers we had taking out mortgages to buy homes they couldn't afford. The system said, oh, yeah, let's lend money to the subprime mortgagers or the borrowers and subprime borrowers here in the United States. And the system said, yeah, let's just get them to sign on the line and it'll be great. We'll make money one way or another. Well, it was stupid. And it was stupid to lend all that money to Greece. And Greece was stupid to borrow it. And the creditors were stupid to lend it to them. And now we've got a problem. Two stupid people have created two stupid people have created a problem. And how do we fix stupid? This week, Greece's two largest unions called for tens of thousands of members to leave their jobs, shutting down airports, banks, and schools, and paralyzing much of the country. I mean, this isn't going to work. They're not going to squeeze the money out of the stone. You understand? The unions or whoever will resist this austerity, and if they have to shut down the country, which will only make things worse, they'll shut down the country. At least 20,000 people joined in three protests in Athens to rally against austerity measures. Dozens of youths were shown clashing with helmet-clad riot police. My salary's not enough to even cover my basic needs, said Dimitris Nokomis, a teacher. My students are starving. Demonstrations have been common over the last 5 years, but have been largely quieted since January, when Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras swept into power, promising to end years of budget cuts. Right? It seems like Zimpris has been there for 3 or 4 years. He's only been there since January. He's only given going on a year. He's been riding this bucking bronco, you know, and he came in sweet promising to end years of budget cuts. How are they going to end years of budget cuts if they are not a productive people? The budget cuts, if you're only earning $20,000 a year, you can't live as if you're making $50,000 a year. Maybe you were making 50, but now you're making 20, and you have to adjust your budget accordingly. Now, how is he going to end years of budget cuts if they're not producing enough income and a higher enough standard of living in the private sector in Greece in the first place to provide enough taxes to allow the government to continue funding its programs? If they can't get the money they need to fund these budgetary promises of free health care and a bunch of whatever else they're promising over there, if they can't get that out of the Greek people, where do they get it? They get it by borrowing from European creditors. But the European creditors were lending the money to subprime borrowers. The Greeks were subprime borrowers. And here we have the subprime borrowers, and they are now saying, we want to keep that $250,000 house we got from the bank, essentially got from the bank by means of our subprime mortgage agreement, right? Even though we can't make the payments on the house, we want to keep it. And the creditors are insisting, no, you've got to pay the mortgage on the house, even though they know that these people are subprime borrowers and they can't pay it. They never had the money. The whole thing was stupid from the beginning, and now they are caught. Stupid, caught in this. According to Reuters, Tsipras's political party, Syriza, supported Thursday's strike. He's the government. He's supporting. This is just beyond. The government is supporting the strike that's shutting down the businesses and the economy in Greece because many members believe the move would raise Greece's leverage during discussions with lenders. Right? This is analogous to Rahm Emanuel and Hillary Clinton's declaration that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. They're simply saying, we can use this crisis to our advantage. Now, so we'll shut down the Greek economy in order to gain leverage with the European Union creditors. This is cutting off your nose to spite your face. When the average wage has already been cut by 30%, the Social Security system is at risk of collapse. We cannot stand still. Yes, all right, so this is one person's statement. They've got big trouble. Wages are down 30%. Social Security system is in risk of collapse. Yes, they've got to do something, but what can you do when you're broke and non-productive? And you can't borrow anymore. Greece may need more than 14 billion euros to avoid insolvency. I've argued occasionally on this program, and I continue to think this may be true, that the solution to the problem is to follow the example of Little Iceland. They were warned, oh my gosh, if they don't pay their debts and keep on trying to pay the impossible, pay debts that were impossible to pay, they would have some sort of a great economic collapse in Iceland. Iceland said, to heck with it. We're going to go insolvent. We're going to admit we're insolvent. We're not going to pay the debt. And they're, what now what? And they had a difficult 18 to 24 months, and now they are restored and they have a prosperous economy. I'm not convinced that this great fear, oh my gosh, we've got to avoid insolvency. Whatever we do, we can't go insolvent. We've got to try to pay the debt, even if we can't pay it. I think the fundamental premise is wrong to try to avoid insolvency. Why not just say, look, we're broke. I'm sorry. Don't have the money. Can't pay. Because it's the truth of the matter. And it's not just Greece's fault. Yes, Greece was wrong to take on more money, more debt than it could repay. That's true. But the creditors were just as wrong to lend money to a subprime borrower and expect that they would get it back. Both sides were wrong, in my opinion, and the reality, no matter what you do, the debt's not going to be repaid. We can dance around this from now until the start of the next century.
And the truth of the matter is the Greeks aren't going to be able to pay the debt, the existing debt. So why not just call a spade, say, look, we're broke, we're bankrupt, sorry about that. All right, let's zero it all out. We'll start from scratch. Now the Greek people could start pulling in the same direction. Yeah, they'd have a difficult time for a couple of years. But they could start working to restore their own prosperity without carrying this enormous debt on their backs. And they could adjust their own economy and their political system to say, this is what we can afford. These are the taxes we're willing to pay. These are the social services we're prepared to provide. And it might not be what they had hoped for, but nevertheless, it would be obvious when they dealt with the truth. They could say, this is all the money we got. We can't pay more than what we get. And they would have to face reality, and they would be better off for it, in my opinion. Tsipras, again, the prime minister, he says, Tsipras is now negotiating with lenders for the release of more than 10 billion euros to Greek banks. The European Union and IMF are pushing the country to comply with tougher foreclosure policies and non-payment of taxes. All right. Again, two stupid people, two stupid institutions, the Greek government and the European lenders. And they are caught in their own stupidity. And what are you going to do? Somebody needs to cut bait and say, to heck with it. We're out of here.
Well, in the meantime, Al, somebody's making a lot of money on these deals. And in the meantime, the poor people of Greece, you know, they're losing their businesses. They're losing their livelihoods. I mean, there's been thousands of businesses that have shut down. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have the wealth move in. You're going to have these the Walmarts of the world move in. They're going to push more of these mom-and-pop shops out of business that can't go on, and wait until some of these refugees get in there. And what's the government going to do with them? And how are they going to pay that? Wait till the citizens of Greece say, hey, you know, I'm not getting paid. Now you're going to allow these guys in here, take my share of my pie.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Well, you know, Greece has to wake up.
The world has to wake up.
Well, I get that. That's where we're going with this. The world is going to have to realize you can't just have everything that some politician promises.
But it's just
there
not
is
the politicians,
no free lunch.
Al.
Politicians
it's
are constantly promising a free lunch, and there's no such thing. You have to look at the politicians and say, no, that somebody's got to pay for that lunch. And if it's not me, it's my kids, my grandkids, my neighbors. Somebody's got to pay for that free lunch, that allegedly free lunch. I don't think we can afford it. And people have to change their notions of government. We have too many people think government can just supply anything and anything it promises. And it's nonsense. It's crazy. It's self-destructive. All right? We're going to have to wake up and say, look, here's what we can afford. Here's how much we'll make. We're able to work and make this much. We can afford this much. But we can't afford more. We can't live beyond our own incomes.
Well, gee, Al, nobody makes money that way. The bankers, the multinational corporations, you know, all the billionaires, one makes any money on the backs of the citizens. So come on. Where's the right in that?
Well, they try to make money on the banks.
But trust me, they make money.
Yeah, I understand.
They make lots of money.
The public's not making
laws.
Well, it may, but it's still not
legislation is
public. It's still not going back to the public.
Legislation isn't
the debt, and the profits go to special interests. It can't work. It just won't work.
Legislation isn't made to help the citizens of the country. The legislation is usually created and passed to help the bankers and the multinational and the elite.
I agree.
That's what and that's been going on since day one.
Oh, I don't know since day one.
Pretty close.
Since day one, but it's been going on. It is predominant in this country and perhaps around the world. The laws, the people who have money, enough money to hire lobbyists, all right? They're in a position to spend money on congressmen, senators here in this country and the equivalent in other countries, where they essentially bribe them with political campaign contributions to broker laws. They don't write the laws. They just broker them. They don't legislate. They broker. And they say, okay, how much money you got? You need a law that'll make people wear seatbelts, helmets, and the rest of that sort of thing? We'll pass a law if you got enough money to bribe us to do that. It doesn't matter whether it's a good law or bad law. Can the politicians get paid to pass these laws? And the rich are able, super rich are able to bribe the politicians. The politicians serve who gives them money, not just who votes for them, but who gives them money. That's who they are serving. And what do the people who give them money want? They want more money. We're going to give you $1,000 on condition that you pass a law that will allow us to take $100,000 from the yokel taxpayers who don't have enough money to bribe congressmen and senators. The whole system is representing, increasingly representing the rich rather than the ordinary people of the nations of the United States and England and Europe and the rest of that sort of thing. It appears to me to be a growing theme. The world is being run by the oligarchy and for the oligarchy, and it can't work. It can't last. I saw a report from, I believe it was Gerald Celente, and he said 85 people on the world, in this world, 85 people have more wealth between those 85 than is held by 3.5 billion people on the face of the earth. There's no way that 85 people are working harder and smarter than 3.5 billion. This is evidence of some sort of massive fraud, injustice, and even if it were true that the 85 who own more wealth than the other 3.5 billion, even if it were the result of working harder and smarter, and it was all honest and above board, as a practical matter, it's not going to be allowed to continue. One way or another, the 3.5 billion are going to say we need a bigger cut of the pie. And the 85 are going to have to give some of that up. And if they don't, they're going to lose their heads. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Yeah.
I have a comment from an email, a listener. If Greece had the drachma instead of the euro, not only could they default, but they could inflate the currency to pay off the creditors. But Greece can't print more euros and can't default without hurting the euro and making most of Western Europe mad.
Well, that's probably true, and it's one of those things that says maybe having a single currency for all of Europe is a bad idea. Maybe it's better to have one currency for each nation, and doing so forces each nation to behave in a way that is responsible. You know, rather than just going into more debt, I doubt that you can point... I won't say there are no nations in Europe that aren't deeply in debt, but I'd be surprised if there are many. They are all on the same path as Greece. They've got more debt than they can pay.
We have
Greece threatens the whole debt-based monetary system, and that may be the reason why the creditors are saying, "You got to pay, you got to pay, you got to pay. Even if you can't pay, you got to pay."
We had David Cameron, who reported that he's ready to discuss pulling away from the Eurozone, but they do not trade with the euro. You know, they kept their currency.
The English pound.
Yeah. So they kept their currency, mm-hmm. But they're looking to possibly leave the Eurozone in a couple of years. So I mean, they're having demands. You know, that they're going to be requesting. So again, even though they don't trade with the same currency, you can't have countries all trading the same. I mean, it won't work.
But the advantage to it, you know, if we each had our own currency, all right, and they were distinct, it would be, for example, Libya wanted to set up a Pan-African currency that was backed by gold. Well, if every nation in the world was free to establish its own currency, and some of them actually said, you know what, why don't we try a currency backed by gold, or maybe silver, and we could back that. Well, why not? And the reason is, as soon as we have a currency anywhere on the globe that's backed by gold or silver, the money of the world, the currency of the world, the fiat is going to rush into that, and that country will prosper dramatically, and the rest of them, the fiat monetary system, will be shown to be a dead letter, a false, a fraud, a Ponzi scheme, the rest of it. It's the reason we invaded Iraq. It's the reason we invaded, or at least helped to destroy Libya. They threatened the U.S. dollar. They threatened the fiat dollar system. I have no doubt that the New World Order is built on the concept of a fiat debt-based monetary system. If we ever get rid of that, the whole idea of New World Order goes right down the pipe. There's big money, big power that is absolutely dependent on maintaining the debt-based monetary system. So that system has to go global, and it essentially has. Virtually mm-hmm. every country in the world is running a debt-based monetary system right now. But they are not, even though they are all debt-based and all fiat, or virtually all, they are not necessarily coordinated just yet. You know, they're the same. It's like they're all Republicans or they're all Democrats, but still they have their own special interests. From the New World Order's perspective, they need to get everybody synchronized. Where we have inflation is the same rate for Japan and the United States and Europe and China and South America. It's the same everywhere you go.
And that debt-based system takes the power away from the people.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why they love it, and it controls the people. They know the value of gold. They know the wealth of gold. They don't want you to know, because once you know, they control you, or they can't control you anymore. So that is why you hear all of this, you know, that's why there's so much control over the price of gold. And you look at countries like China and India, their cultures. I mean, gold is part of their culture. They understand. They
get
it.
Part of our constitution.
They
get
it.
We don't get it.
Right.
Here's the big point behind, from my perspective, to the debt-based monetary system. Suppose Melody is selling flat-screen TVs, and I decide to buy one from Melody, and I give her a check for $1,000 for a new flat-screen TV. Is Melody paid when she receives my check? And the answer is no, she is not paid. I get the flat screen TV, but she is not paid until she actually deposits the check in her bank account. And then her bank runs the check digitally, perhaps, against the bank where I have my account. And my bank charges the $1,000 check to my account. And if I have $1,000 in my account, they deduct $1,000 from my account and they transfer it back to Melody. And now, for the sake of this analogy, she's paid. But the point I'm trying to illustrate is that when I write that check, it has to be to pay for the flat screen TV. It has to be charged against my account. We can't charge the account. We can't charge my check to Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Janet Yellen. The check has to be charged to my account. Now, imagine that we were living in a world where the check didn't have to be charged to my account. And I had a special deal. And I could write a $1,000 check to Melody, and Melody would take the $1,000 check, but she would never deposit it for being redeemed against my account. Well, that would be pretty cool. I could write a $1,000 check to Melody, and it never gets charged to my account. And if I have more checks, I could write another one for $100,000 to buy a new roll, or maybe not a Rolls, but at least a new Cadillac. And then why not $1,000,000? I could write another one. If it's never charged to my account, I could write another check for $1,000,000, and I could buy a mansion. And then I could buy a city, and I could buy a county, and I could buy a state, and I could buy a nation, as long as no one actually redeemed my checks against my account. I write the checks, but they're not redeemed against my account. I could grow fabulously wealthy. I could grow fabulously powerful so long as people didn't redeem checks against my account. How could this be achieved? It could be achieved. I give the check for $1,000 to Melody, and rather than depositing in the banking system and charging it to my account, Melody goes out and trades it to somebody else to buy, who knows, some sort of a new stereo system for her car or truck or whatever. She gives him my check. And he takes the check. He says, oh, that's a check for Malatis. That's okay. $1,000, I'll take that, because I know some other idiot down the street will also take it in trade for tools or whatever, $1,000 worth of whatever. And the check is redeemed by other people, not me. It's not charged against my account. This is what's happening with the Federal Reserve and the federal government. They issue these green pieces of paper that we call Federal Reserve notes. We carry them around in our wallet, but by law, they can never be redeemed against the entity that issues the currency. By law, if you want to take a $100 bill and take it down to the Federal Reserve and you say, I'd like to redeem this, they're not going to give you any gold. They're not going to give you any silver. They will at most give you a new and crispy $100 bill. But that's all you're going to get. You are not going to get that $100 redeemed. This is the great power of the debt-based monetary system. They don't pay out of their account. If I write the check on $1,000 for the flat-screen TV, the $1,000 has to be deducted from my account. Nothing's deducted from the account of the Federal Reserve and or the federal government when they pay with these green pieces of paper. The way it works is we take the green pieces of paper and we spend them, right? We spend them. I find the guy across the street and he's willing to take a stack of $100 bills for his bass boat or his used car. Or maybe I go to town and I get a real estate agent and I pay for another house or whatever. We, the people, are redeeming the debt instruments that are issued by the Federal Reserve. That's what happens. We are redeeming it by being able to spend this money. I'm able to spend this worthless piece of paper. As long as I can find enough morons out there in TV land who are willing, well, that's a $100 bill. I'll take that. Sure. I'll expend my life. I will expend my work. I'll expend my energy, my property. I've dissipated it all for a worthless piece of paper.
And very few people understand or grasp what I'm saying here, but we are urinating our lives and our property away for green pieces of paper that are never redeemed against the account of the party that issued them. Now, I don't know if I've made that very clear or not, and I know it's the kind of idea that the average person is, what? But you'll get it, all right? You're going to understand this. We can't, you and I, if you go out and issue a debt instrument, which is all a check is, say, okay, I promise to pay $1,000. Melody runs that through the bank for the flat screen TV, her bank, to my bank account, and they deduct $1,000 from my account because I issued the debt instrument. I promised to pay $1,000 when I wrote the check. Somebody promised to pay something when they issued a Federal Reserve note, but they don't pay it out of their account. It gets paid by we the people spending their promise to pay. We spend it with other people. But it's never charged against their account. It is the great power. It is the great advantage of a debt-based monetary system. And it's absolutely lethal. It's the foundation for big and growing government. And by definition, it's the foundation for a loss of rights. You and I are becoming less and more like we have less rights, and we are more and more like serfs and subjects and perhaps even slaves. And it's built on this debt-based monetary system. So the New World Order wants this. They want a system where they don't have to pay their bills. As long as we are willing to spend them, somebody gives me $1,000 for my work, right? $1,000 bills. I don't redeem it against the Federal Reserve. I redeem it with Melody, by spending it with Melody. The system seems to work fine, all right? But while we're engaged in the system, the Federal Reserve is not paying its bills. The $100 bills are never redeemed against their account. You and I are paying their debts, and that's why they love this debt-based system, because we are the debtors. And we're paying their debts. Huh? They are growing fabulously powerful and wealthy, and we are assuming more and more debt. If we had a gold and silver-based monetary system, then you'd have a situation as we used to have silver certificates, we used to have gold certificates. You go to the bank if you cared to, and say, I would like 100 silver dollars. I got a $100 bill here. I'd like 100 silver dollars. Or I'd like 5 $20 gold pieces or 2 $50 gold pieces or whatever we have priced on these things. And it would come out of the account of the Federal Reserve or whoever issued those certificates. And that would keep them from growing disproportionately, unjustly, unfairly wealthy and powerful. But as long as we accept this debt-based monetary system, it is the foundation for a kind of global tyranny, oppression, servitude. It's all there. You're carrying it around in your hip pocket, folks. You redeem those. You're redeeming the Federal Reserve's debt, but not with the Federal Reserve. You redeem it with your neighbors and your friends and your employees, whatever.
And that's also a prime example when we have stock markets that crash, and we do, we've had them, we're going to have them again. Only one of these days they're not going to come back like they did. That's why people run. They want to get rid of those dollars that they're holding, and they want real money. We just saw a huge demand in gold spike when we had this latest drop in the stock market. And this, why? Because people want to get rid of those dollars they're holding because they know they're going to be worthless. Maybe not by November, maybe not by December, but somewhere along the line when they have these big market moves that we've seen, and it's coming, it's around the corner. So if you want to hold on to those dollars and be too late to the game, that's your choice. But you get rid of those paper dollars and you get some gold. You become your own central bank. It will protect your other paper assets that you continue to carry. It's the insurance policy. That's what needs to be told about gold and silver. And it's
we will tell it next Monday.
Already?
Yeah, we're out of time, Baldy. That means TGIF.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday 13th.
Happy Friday the 13th. Thanks for listening, folks. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.